is next.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today with Reverend Donna Hacker-Smith, who is pastor of Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Champaign, about the Christian theology in the Harry Potter books. Now, how did you find any Christian theology in the Harry Potter books?
Well, I think Christian theology is anything that, with knowledge of Scripture and Christ, addresses that gaping hole that is within each one of us, our need to feel that sense of belonging, to feel hope, meaning, redemption in this world. And I think our children sense even more than we adults do in reading the Harry Potter books that those elements are present. So as a Christian, as I was enticed to read the books and got addicted rapidly, partially because I was an English major, and I think I see elements of Dickens and C.S. Lewis and some others in Rowling's work, I began to search around for anybody who had an approach to these books. I was also startled to find how many Christians still are interpreting the books as a threat to the faith rather than an option to find more meaning within the faith. And I guess it was when I first read Connie Neal's book, The Gospel According to Harry Potter, subtitled Spirituality and the Stories of the World's Most Famous Seeker, I began to get into some serious biblical themes that were obviously present within Harry Potter and that I think are still evolving and developing. And now all of a sudden the tide has turned. There are a lot of books running around that are more positive from a Christian standpoint. And I think I was in on it early enough that I should have been smart and I should have written a book, but instead I've been reading them.
Now, you are a writer. You've published articles and devotional work and Bible studies and things like that. So
yes.
So you are kind of kicking yourself for not having done this early?
I don't know. Maybe not. But I've had more fun teaching it than anything else. Teaching the Harry Potter materials has just been an absolute blast.
Where have you taught it?
At my own church, primarily. I've taught it to a group of children, and I've also offered it as an adult course. It didn't float quite so well there, but it was summertime, and I think we just had a hard time getting people in. You know how that goes. But last year in the summer, I offered a three-session course for the children at Good Shepherd and offered them the opportunity to come and explore some of the Christian themes in these books that they love. And the response was excellent. We had between 15 and 17 at a session. Using some of the lesson plan work that you can find on the internet for teachers, I pulled in some activity sheets and such, but we developed some distinctly biblically related activities that the kids were able to do. Would you like an example of one?
Sure.
I'll give you one. One example would be in the first case, in the first book, Harry Potter is sorted by the sorting hat at Hogwarts School into the house of the school that suits him best. Each of the houses at Hogwarts has very distinctive characteristics and goals. And the two really antagonistic ones in the books are Gryffindor and Slytherin, Slytherin being the evil dark side and Gryffindor being the heroic side. And Harry wanted to be in Gryffindor. So when he put on the sorting hat, the hat was going to put him in Slytherin. But he made a conscious choice that he wanted to go to Gryffindor. And so the hat put him there. So the kids, I found a quiz online that let them answer some multiple choice questions that sorted them out into the house they would be in, which was a real adventure. I had a little guy who was maybe in first grade. Hi, Colton. And Colton's first multiple choice answer put him into Slytherin. And he started to cry.
Oh, no.
He was, I want to be a Slytherin. He wound up in Gryffindor, I'm very glad to say. Anyway, I then had made a list myself of Bible characters with some scripture passages, and the kids with some adults helping looked up these stories, these biblical stories, and they looked up the characters, and I asked them to tell me what house they would put those characters into, and like what traits and characteristics distinguish some of the people we encounter in scripture. And they had a ball with it. So, for example, when they looked at Esther, Queen Esther, who is a figure of great intestinal strength and stands up to evil and is willing to sacrifice herself, she's obviously a Gryffindor. Mm-hmm. When you see someone who is like Solomon, who is very wise, he's going to be a Ravenclaw. And so the kids were able to do this kind of thing real clear. And Herod, by the way, is a Slytherin.
And on Halloween night, what better time could there be than to say the word Slytherin?
Oh, I love Slytherin. I think you cannot do better than the names in the Harry Potter books. It's interesting because I reviewed some of the writings today, and one of the first books that came out was one called A Charmed Life, The Spirituality of Potter World, which is by a Presbyterian minister, by the way.
Who's the author?
Frances Bridger, okay. Who is British. And she definitely... or he, rather, purported that the Harry Potter book's Christian themes were strictly coincidental. On the other hand, John Granger's book, Looking for God in Harry Potter, which just came out and even encompasses Order of the Phoenix, the last book, definitely feels that everything is for a reason in the Harry Potter books, even the names. And she is a great lover of Jane Austen and C.S. Lewis and Dickens, and there's a lot of history in here, right down to the point where he feels that J.K. Rowling was even thinking hard when she gave Harry Potter his name, because his parents are James and Lily. Lily is always a symbol of the resurrection and life in the hereafter. Lily's on Easter. His dad is James. James being the brother of Jesus, symbol of royalty, court of St. James in England, and so on. And Harry himself, if you look at the two words hair or air, there could be that, you could suggest that there is that quality. Or also all of Shakespeare's writings about King Henry, especially Henry V being referred to as Harry. Prince Harry. And then Potter, Isaiah's references to God as the potter. And so this could be the heir of God. And there's a son of God kind of analogy that could be suggested there. I admit a lot of people would feel that's a stretch. Mm-hmm. But the names are not only fun to say. I mean, who doesn't like to say Albus Dumbledore and Hermione Granger and Albus Finch, Argus Finch. I'm sorry, I got to get that right or somebody will call. They know. Right. The kids know these things.
Well, let me give the phone numbers for those who are listening who'd like to call to either make a correction or make a comment or ask a question. This is a live program every Sunday afternoon from 5 to 6 on WILL AM 580. And our guest today is Reverend Donna Hacker Smith. And Pastor Smith is at the Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Champaign. And we're talking about the Christian thought, Christian themes, Christian theology in the Harry Potter books. And if you'd like to ask a question, anywhere the program is heard, including on the internet, you may call us toll free 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL, the call letters of the station. In Champaign-Urbana, you can punch in 333-9455, so local listeners have several local lines that they can access by using 333-WILL. I do encourage you to call with comments or questions for Reverend Donna Smith. Well, what age kids seem to respond best to Harry Potter? I would have thought first graders were too young.
I would have too. And actually, I would urge parents to be a little cautious beyond the first book or so. It's getting darker.
Okay.
Because as Harry grows up and becomes more adult and faces his destiny head on, there's definitely some darker elements that are taking charge. And we've actually had in the last book, without giving away a spoiler, the death of one of the most, one of the major characters.
Okay.
And so it's gotten tough, and Harry's really grappling with issues. I would say...
But then death has been a theme in
children's literature forever.
From fairy tales on. But you started to say the answer to my first question.
No, I'd say third grade.
Yeah,
I'd say third grade.
Okay.
I would go from third grade on. I've got grandchildren who started with it around third grade. I've got kids though in church who are younger than that, and mom or dad read the story to them, and that would be all right because then you can talk it up as you go along.
Sure.
And I think that's an important element. I would never say that a parent should just toss the Harry Potter book at a child. a Christian parent especially, don't just give the kid the book and say, go to a corner and have a nice time. This is a great opportunity to engage with your child or your grandchild in themes that relate to their own faith formation. How do they want to be like Harry? How do they want to be like Ron or Hermione? You know, what are they going to look for?
Let's take a moment for our listeners who may not be familiar at all with Harry Potter. Maybe they've never read it. Maybe they've never even heard of it.
Yeah.
Tell us when they came out, how many books are out so far, who's the author, a little bit about her.
Yeah. Well, Joanne Rowling, R-O-W-L-I-N-G, is the author. The Potter books have been around for a while now, and I can't even give you an exact date, but we have some of the, well, I can give you an exact date. I have my Muggles and Magic book here, which, you know, just kind of gives you the whole story. But the it's almost become legendary now that that J.K. Rowling was at the time a single parent and was writing as at a sidewalk cafe. She could only afford to buy one cup of coffee, and she would sit there and write on napkins. And the first five books are out in the series. There are only to be seven.
Okay.
And each book definitely represents 1 year in the life of Harry Potter at school. Harry begins like a classic Dickens character. He's an orphan. He's living with an aunt and an uncle who resent his presence. So he's starting to be kind of Oliver Twist on us right away. Mm. He has a cousin who lives with them who is just wicked to him. And the first book is really the story of his discovery of this identity that he has that he didn't know and had no idea about. He gets an invitation to go to the Hogwarts School of Wizardry and magic, and he goes off and starts to discover who he is, what his heritage is, and that he has a very a strange and obscure destiny that he's gradually owning up to, and actually a very frightening destiny as the time goes on, because he is tied up in a huge battle of good versus evil.
Hmm.
Very frightening, and it requires everything that he can learn and acquire to add that, make good choices, take responsibility, and be the person that his parents have made him to be and that his teachers are making him to be. And he can be the one who defeats this evil in the wizarding world.
Now, these are books about children, and they're written for children, but mm-hmm. adults obviously can enjoy them too and have.
Totally.
Why is that?
Because they're beautifully written. They're like all the great children's literature, fantasy literature. You could say that the Chronicles of Narnia are children's books, or the Lord of the Rings trilogy, or you could say that Star Wars is a movie that's just for kids. But we know that adults are able to find layers of meaning. Personally, as an undergrad English major, I just love her writing. I find her delightful, and I often found myself reading sentences or paragraphs aloud to my husband and saying, you got to hear the way that she describes this, because I can see it in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
She's so vivid, and she has a wonderful imagination, just vivid. And children love imaginative people, and they just run with it. So I think she just does an amazing job with that. You know, to say that adults like it is true, and to say that it's available for adults really takes it another step further. I've even bought the large print edition for my husband.
Hmm.
He hasn't read it yet, but I have bought it for him. Lead the horse to water, you know.
Now there are people who resist reading books of children's literature.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just the opposite. I've always liked it, and now in my 60s, I'm enjoying rereading some things that I first encountered as a even a preteen. But some people just resist it. Is it the simplified vocabulary, or is it the themes?
I wonder if our pride gets in the way.
Okay.
I mean,
uh-huh.
I guess I think sometimes as adults we feel like we might be wasting our time if we read a children's book.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, the best crafted children's books open doors and windows into the soul and the heart, I think, in ways that adult literature hopes it can.
Hmm.
And to me, that's one of the beauties of Harry Potter. The challenges and the themes and the characterizations in this book are absolutely and totally the kind of things that could challenge an adult.
We're talking today on Keeping the Faith with Reverend Donna Hacker Smith, who is the pastor at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Champaign. And let me encourage listeners who would like to ask her a question to call. in Champaign-Urbana, where the program originates, you may punch in 333-9455. Elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455 is a free call. We do have a listener who's on line one. Please go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. My husband and I have read the Harry Potter books, too, and we just love them. We noticed, I'm an English major also, we noticed a lot of what we think are mythological references.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I was wondering, this didn't dawn on me when I was reading the book, but in the last 5 minutes, I wondered if Hermione might be a feminine Hermes, like the messenger in any way. And I wondered, it seems to me there is a saint named Henry somewhere in my reading. I don't remember where.
Okay.
And I wondered if Harry Potter, it's too soon to tell, I guess, but he does struggle with good and evil. He does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're on to a very good point there. The book that I mentioned by John Granger, Looking for God in Harry Potter, is one that you might find interesting because it delves into the alchemy symbolism that seems to be present in Harry Potter. And Hermione, of course, plays right into that because Hermione has that red quality. She's one of the alchemic characters that John Granger cites in his book. He says Hermione is the feminine form of Hermes, so you see you're right on with him, who besides being the Greek messenger god was also the name of the great alchemist Hermes Trismegistos, in whose name countless alchemical works were written through the century. So there you have it. And he also notes that Harry's father James is named after the patron saint of alchemists, and Mother Lily, a symbol for the purifying stage of the alchemic work. And there's a lot more about that. I had never imagined this level of thought had gone into these characters, but Joanne Rowling is very classically oriented, and so I would not be surprised. I mean, look at her wonderful ability to conjure up phony Latin. Oculus Reparis for fixing eyeglasses. That's a marvelous thing. So caller is right on with the Hermione reference. And I urge you, if you look for John Granger's book, or you can call me over at the church at 352-1732. And I would be available to give you the complete details on how to order this book, or contact me through our church website, which is gslc-cu.org.
Let me just repeat those numbers that Pastor Smith has been kind enough to offer. During the week, you could reach her at 352-1732 at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Champaign, and their website is www.gslc, for Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, -cu.org. We have another caller waiting, and I do thank the first caller for her questions. And let's go again to line one. You're on the air.
Hey, Donna, how are you? My name is Dimitri, and I had a question to ask you.
Sure.
Did you look at all into the fact that the author spent a lot of time actually researching for these books by going out and looking at occult rituals and other groups that are involved in Satan worshiping and such rituals, and in fact incorporated such things into her books? I'm just surprised how you're saying that this book can open the hearts of your children into and touch the soul, because in fact you're just opening up a doorway for this delusional world to get them involved in the whole spiritual realm and basically being entertained by demons and such other dark forces that these books, in fact, are based on actual practices. I'm not sure if you're aware of the old cult or what they do, but they're out there, and these books are based on that. So how can you possibly find Christ at all in these books?
Mm-hmm. I think possibly, Dimitri, you've gotten a hold of some bad information. First of all, let me say that I just respect people who choose to believe that any reference to wizarding means that they shouldn't look at the books. And I will say that's true. I don't believe that that is correct about J.K. Rowling delving into the occult as part of her research. In fact, there was an email that circulated a couple of years back that that was being passed around that claimed to have quotes in it from children who had been converted to occult practices and satanic rituals because of Harry Potter books. And actually, it was entirely snipped from The Onion, which is the satirical weekly on the web. And that was the one that said that J.K. Rowling did the occult studies. J.K. Rowling is a member of the Church of Scotland. She's Presbyterian. She's a very, very strong Christian, and she has been quoted as saying that that she basically, if people know her faith and they know her Christian faith, they will even be able to sense where the books are going. So having said that, I would say these are not really a cult. Now, to call this satanic is a real stretch because Satan is simply not present in these books. There are only two times that the word devil is used in all five Harry Potter books. One of them is the name of a plant, and that plant is in the second book, I think, and the kids fall into devil's snare plant, which will swallow you up, except that it will cringe away and disappear at light, which is really sort of a cool Christian symbolism, too, in a lot of ways. The other reference to it is when somebody is saying something negative and they say, "What the devil?" And that's as close as you can get to references to the devil. There's a quote from a 2000 interview with Katie Couric talking to Joanne Rowling. And let me just read that to you very quickly. Katie Couric says, "I'm not sure if we should bite this off, but I'm going to anyway. Tammy in Kansas was wondering, what would encourage you to write books for children that are supporting the devil, witchcraft, and anything that has to do with Satan? You've heard that before." Joanne Rowling says, "Well, nothing would encourage me to do that because I haven't done it so far, so why should I start now?" Katie Couric says, "You have heard criticism along those lines ever since the beginning. I think it grew as more and more books came out." And here's her response. "A very famous writer once said, a book is like a mirror. If a fool looks in, you can't expect a genius to look out. People tend to find in books what they want to find, and I think my books are very moral. I know they have absolutely nothing to do with what this lady is writing about, so I'm afraid I can't give her much help there." So frankly, if that's what you're finding in these books, I understand that's what you see, and I'm not going to argue with you about it. But I would say that that is certainly not at all the author's intent. She did not observe occult practices. And we're missing the boat to really touch our kids and join them where they are if we don't delve into this with them, instead of discouraging them from something which I believe is very good.
Now, you believe the books overall are good, but they certainly do have they deal with the issue of evil. They start off with, as you say, someone in the family who's treats Harry Potter very wickedly. Mm-hmm. There's the opportunity for people to make choices of evil, and evil's described accurately, I guess.
Yeah.
How do you respond to a children's book that's not just all good?
Well, I think the way you said it before, I mean, we've had, poor old Hansel and Gretel had a witch that wanted to throw them into the oven and bake them, you know, and eat them for breakfast or whatever. And I think our kids have heard mythologized evil all their lives. I really appreciate that kids are being told that evil is very dangerous and that it is something to stay away from. Mm-hmm. And I would hope that any parent would keep their kids from delving into some of the fringe folks who have tried to horn in on the Harry Potter stuff, contrary to J.K. Rowling's purposes.
We have another caller waiting again on line one. You're on the air with our guest, Donna Smith. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I'm joining in late, so maybe you've already addressed this, but just in reference to what the last caller seemed to be concerned about, I have also had people express this kind of concern, and I found it helpful to think of the Potter books as basically about a particular ethnic group who happens to have access to it. It's a technology that other people maybe don't have access to, but it's really not so much about magic and the occult as it is about this particular group that is kind of marginalized from society and is misunderstood and mistrusted because they have different practices from the mainstream of society. And I wonder if maybe you could address that.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you. I think that's a good approach. I think there is something to that. Another analogy that I came across that really kind of astounded me until I thought about it was comparing the Harry Potter stories to A Christmas Carol, that the objections that we might make to Harry Potter are similar to those we should be able to make to a book like A Christmas Carol, where a man is changed because of his works and not because of God's grace and because of the intervention of spirits. It's about ghosts and spirits. He flies in the air. There is magic involved. And yet, who would deny that A Christmas Carol is a Christian book? I don't think there is any doubt about it. And so I think your analogy of this is just simply a different ethnic group, a different expression of universal themes, is perfectly appropriate. That's a cool way to go at it, I think.
Thank you for the question. Let me take just a minute to reintroduce our guest. We're talking with Donna Hacker Smith, who's the pastor at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Champaign. And we're talking about the Christian theology in the Harry Potter books. We'll be getting back with our guest in just a moment, but since we're about halfway through the program, let me remind people that you are listening to Keeping the Faith. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for the program. Keeping the Faith is supported in part by the University YMCA at the University of Illinois, where I'm the executive director. The Campus Y here is the oldest religious institution at the university. It was started by students in 1873, and since that time has been helping develop student leaders by providing opportunities for community service and social action. I might mention that at the Y this evening, in fact, right after this program at 6 o'clock, there'll be a free showing of Michael Moore's film, Fahrenheit 9/11, followed by, since the Y has to be nonpartisan, of course, and following Michael Moore's film at 6 o'clock at 8:30, there will be also a free showing of Fahrenheit 9/11, which was produced to counter Michael Moore's film. So both sides will be presented at the University Y tonight. The Michael Moore's film, Fahrenheit 9/11, at 6 p.m. That's on Halloween night, 6 p.m. at the Y, 1001 South Wright Street in Champaign, and then at 8:30, Fahrenheit 9/11, also a free showing.
That's pretty scary stuff, even for Halloween.
It is indeed. Also coming up this week at the University YMCA, we will not be having our Know Your University series, which is usually on Tuesday noon, because the Y is one of the polling places. And I do remind students, staff, university faculty, and, of course, people in the community to vote on Tuesday. You do need to find the right precinct to vote in. If you need information about that, call the county clerk's office or check out the websites available. Coming up the following week on Know Your University on Tuesday, November 9, the Orange Crush students will be talking about their operations, supporting particularly the basketball team at the U of I, and about the various charitable works that the Orange Crush students do. Coming up this Friday at Friday Forum at the Y, November 5th at noon, free lecture, Moderate Voices for Peace in Jerusalem. Mark Johnson from the YMCA of the United States of America will be talking about the work of the Jerusalem Y, which is made up of one-third Muslims, one-third Jews, and one-third Christians on their board of directors, and their programs are for people of all three faiths. He'll be talking about what he's learned in some recent trips to the Middle East about various religious groups, Muslims, Jews, and Christians, working for peace in that very difficult area of the world. That's this Friday at noon at the Y, and that's a free program. You can buy lunch at the Y or bring a lunch or simply come and listen to the talk. University classes are being planned for next semester at the Y. If you have a course that you'd like to teach, anything from language studies to massage to martial arts, art, literature, and language, we could have a course on Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Please please check the Y website, universityymca.org, and find out how to offer a course as part of the CommuniVersity series of free or inexpensive classes that will start up in January again. If you don't have access to a computer, call the Y at 337-1500. One of the ways the University Y survives is by donations from its friends. And one thing we have been making available for about a year now is if you'd like to donate a car or a truck, we're happy to take that. You can take the value of that vehicle off on your taxes if you itemize. And we sell those vehicles ourselves, often to students, others in the community who appreciate a good buy. And the Y makes some money to help continue our programs. If you'd like to consider doing that and want to find out more information, give me a call. I'm Steve Shoemaker. And again, the Y's phone number is 337-1500. Call me during the week. We currently have a very nice Ford Ranger pickup truck that's available for sale, and within a week or so we'll have a Honda two-door Civic. Both of these are standard transmission, good gas mileage. Might want to consider that. This is, by the way, the last year where people can donate a vehicle to charity and estimate the value of it for their taxes. That's good only up through December 31. After that, you can only take off your taxes what the charity actually sells the vehicle for. A new law just was passed in the last week through Congress. Now, we happen to sell these vehicles for a decent price, so it's still a good deal. But if you don't want to trade in your car or sell it yourself, you might consider donating it to the University YMCA. All right, that's our little promo for the group that provides my services for this program. So let's get back to our guest today. We're talking with Donna Smith about the Harry Potter books. Donna, let's learn a little bit about you. You're a pastor at the Good Shepherd Lutheran Church. How long have you been there now?
About 2.5 years, two years and three quarters,
and,
I guess.
And where were you before you came to Good Shepherd?
Well, I lived up in Freeport, Illinois, north part of the state, and I served at a parish in rural Forreston, Illinois. My husband always teases me that there is no urban forest in Illinois, but we always say, you know, rural, because we were surrounded by cornfields. A delightful little country church. Prior to that, in Freeport for about 9 years, and before that, my first parish in St. Louis. I've been a pastor since 1983.
Where did you go to seminary?
At the Lutheran School of Theology at Chicago, and even took a course at McCormick Presbyterian, which is
close
by. You know.
Right. Yes. So you are at Lutheran School of Theology in Chicago, LSTC.
Mm-hmm.
How many students are in that seminary?
At that time, it was about 150 in residence of, you know, probably 200 total when you throw in grad students and also international students.
Mm-hmm. Now, at the time you went, were there very many women?
Well, no, there weren't. At that time, each class of 50 might have boasted about 5 or 7, mm-hmm. I think. I graduated, of course, in 83, and that was, we weren't even up to 15 years for women yet at that time. But now we've gotten to the point where about half of our classes are female.
Now, tell us a little bit about the Lutheran Church. There are several varieties of Lutherans. You're in the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America.
Yes, yes, yes. And the ELCA was formed in 1987 through a merger of the Lutheran Church in America and the American Lutheran Church. I was in the Lutheran Church in America. The other major branch of Lutheranism represented in town here would be the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I'm gender impaired, so I can't be a pastor in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, but the ELCA and its predecessor bodies ordain women.
And how long has that been the case?
Since about 1970, 1971.
All right. So you're one of the earlier groups of women allowed to be pastors.
Yes, yes, yes. It's a blessing. It is. Happy Reformation Day.
We have a couple callers waiting. Yeah. Let's go to line one again. You're on the air with our guest Donna Hacker-Smith talking about Harry Potter. Yes.
Hello. I've got a comment and a question. The comment is, it's really refreshing to hear a voice of reasonable, clear thinking in a time when so many people are into zero tolerance and fear of everything from dangerous books to our own shadows. And the question is, do you really think there's any danger at all that some misguided kid may try to, you know, emulate magic and do something stupid and dangerous? That's all. Thanks.
Yeah, that's a good comment, and thanks. I hope my husband heard you say that you consider me clear thinking. That could help me later. There's always a possibility somebody's going to do something stupid. I mean, kids watch a Superman movie and try to jump off the garage roof. You know, we all hear those urban legends and, unfortunately, true stories. I would think from the Harry Potter, they're not going to learn anything useful. There aren't really any spells, and there are three spells that are considered to be harmful and are strictly forbidden. And I really don't think that if you looked at somebody and said, Avdara Kedavra, they're going to be killed instantly. And so, I mean, Steve's still sitting here right now after I said it. So I think I think we're okay that way. You know, it's interesting you said that about fear. One of my favorite spells in the Harry Potter books and one of my favorite episodes, which was seen in the last movie, Prisoner of Azkaban, is a boggart, B-O-G-G-A-R-T, which is a spirit that takes the form of your worst fears. And how do you dispel that terrifying boggart? With a spell called a ridiculous, R-I-D-I-K-K-U-L-U-S, which means you laugh at it. Mm. And when you laugh at your fear, it goes away.
Mm. We have another caller waiting on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Wondering, I don't know whether your guest, you know, has a lot of information or knowledge about children's literature and their development and imagination, but I just wonder if maybe you could address the issue of, you know, the use of mythology throughout the Western tradition, even if this mythology might come from pre-Christian times, and then, and you know, maybe the question of whether there's some mythology in Christian religious literature. And then, or about archetypes, you know, kind of images that are just repeated over and over in literature and seem to be something that humans need to tell stories about. And then maybe if you could talk about the literary aspects of the Bible and how, you know, narrative and storytelling can have perhaps spiritual aspects or spiritual effects.
Okay. Great. There's that course I can teach for you at the Y. Or somebody better qualified than me. There are archetypes in literature, and I think, you know, we'd be foolish if we pretended there weren't. I have in front of me in Granger's book, again, a chart that he put together listing in some popular literature and media the three primary symbols or the three parts of the soul as they are represented in some famous literature. So the body or desire, the mind or the will, and then the spirit or the heart. And if you're familiar with, for example, the Lord of the Rings, which is around right now, body would be Gollum or Smeagol, mind or will would be Sam, and spirit would be Frodo. He's heart. Take it to the absurd in Star Trek. Dr. McCoy is body, Spock is mind, Kirk is will or heart. And you can take it to Harry Potter, Weasley, Granger, and Potter. You know, these are classic themes that recur throughout literature. And I cannot claim to be expert enough to say that that's you know, unique to any literature or how you can find it in some other things, but I think it is pervasive. Now, as far as scripture is concerned and mythological influences, I think if you delve into the historical critical method and you look at, for example, the Genesis creation narratives, you will find that there's a strong influence from Babylonian creation myths, because the Hebrew people who were the writers, the Israelites who were writing the narratives of the history of their creation and the creation of the world, were really trying to do an in-your-face to the Babylonians. Even though they had conquered them, they were going to say, hey, our God is the God, and let us show you how. Your God is the moon and the stars and the sun. Our God made the moon and the stars and the sun. And so there is mythology. By this, I don't mean that the Bible is somehow artificial or false. I like to keep my job, and I want to state my beliefs clearly, but I think we have to remember that the Bible also was written in a setting, and as we read our scriptures, we find that that God's people have consistently tried to represent that God is the unique and only God in any setting.
Is there anywhere in the Harry Potter books a sense of the divine?
There is a good question about that, because in the Order of the Phoenix, you know, there's never any mention of God, let's be clear about that, per se. There is a room in the Ministry of Magic, which, interestingly, Ministry of Magic is M-O-M, Mom. And there is a room where there is some kind of a mysterious power that no one can face up to. And it is that power which calls Harry in Order of the Phoenix to the Ministry of Magic to try to save the beloved character who later dies. So there is a hint that there is some great power beyond, but I've seen nothing that is explicit about that yet. There may be more in the future, though.
Two books to go.
Yeah, two books to go. I'm sad already, and, you know, we just haven't, and the sixth one is somewhat delayed because Ms. Rowling, who has remarried now, is once again expecting a baby. And she says it's not really going to stall her, but she has a great website, by the way, jkrowling.com. Mm. It's wonderful. I would go play around on that site. It's fun.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Pastor Donna Hacker Smith from Good Shepherd Lutheran Church. If you have questions for her during the week, you may call her at 217-352-1732 at the church office, or I may contact her with information through the website of the church, GSLC, Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, -cu.org. We are talking with Donna Hacker Smith today. Next week, our guest will be Kevin Stein, who is the current State of Illinois Poet Laureate. He'll be reading from some of his works and talking about writing poetry and being the Poet Laureate for the state. On November 14, our guest will be the chaplain at Cunningham Children's Home, Gay King Creedy. That's November 14, talking about some of her experiences with children there at Cunningham. On November 21st, this is kind of poetry month for Keeping the Faith, the current U.S. Poet Laureate, Ted Kooser, will be our guest in the studio reading some of his poetry, and we're happy to have him from here from Nebraska. November 28, our guest will be Reverend Jack Good, a United Church of Christ pastor, talking about responses to his current book, The Dishonest Church, which takes pastors to task for not talking honestly about the historical critical method, for example, mm-hmm. and allowing people to think that there hasn't been scholarship that's dealt with biblical material. So those are some of the guests coming up weeks ahead, but today we're talking about Harry Potter, and we have another caller waiting to join our guest in the studio, Donna Hacker Smith. Go ahead, please. You're on the air.
Yeah, a couple points. One about reading books with your kids. I don't know whether my mom read the Harry Potter books to my sisters. I have some sisters who are much younger than I am. But anyway, she did read I read the Chronicles of Narnia, or at least one or two of them, with my mom.
C.S. Lewis.
And I read the Hobbit with my dad.
Yeah.
And I think both experiences were very useful, because there's aspects in those books that, you know, if you're in second grade or third grade, you're not going to understand.
Yeah.
And so even if, you know, there's things, you know, for instance, even in the, you know, in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, there's the whole stone table scene and various other things that are things that children probably are going to have to find out about at some point, mm-hmm. but they need some help. And
yes.
So I've never read the Harry Potter books. I probably ought to at some point, but if for no other reason than to not be totally out of touch.
Well, at least rent the movies.
I saw the movies.
Okay, cool. Movies.
But according to my sisters, they're not the same. But anyway, so I'll let you comment on that, and then I have one quick follow-up.
Okay. I think you're right. I think it's wonderful to have a parent read with the child and let the kid raise the questions. I mean, I don't know that I'd go through reading the book and point out, you know, that the name represents one of the archetypical goddesses of Greek literature or something. I would just wait and see what engages the child. And maybe in the scene when Harry encounters the mirror of Erised, for example, which is desire spelled backwards, and he sees himself with his mom and dad, and that's the dearest desire of his heart. What would your child see in that mirror is a great question. Hmm. Ask away and let the kids use their imagination, too. Now, what's your follow-up question?
I kind of wonder, I have to take slight disagreement with your characterization of The Lord of the Rings as opposed to The Hobbit as children's literature.
Okay.
Because I think, while I think it's within the reach of, say, a 6th to 8th grader,
mm-hmm.
a pretty good reader, I think there's sort of a qualitative difference between The Hobbit, which doesn't talk down to children, but it's clearly written, I don't know, I think it's clearly written for children, and The Lord of the Rings, which I think is one of those great unsung World War I novels, a la All Quiet on the Western Front. It's just disguised. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I don't have a – I mean, I think, you know, I read it in sixth grade or something like that. Mm-hmm. But there's an awful lot of depth of theme that probably a kid wouldn't necessarily get. So I don't know that it's a novel I'd say I don't think children should read. I just don't know that I would call it a children's novel per se.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Neither here nor there. And I think I'll just call it a day there. There was something else I was going to say, but I don't remember what it was, so it doesn't matter.
Okay.
We appreciate the comment.
I think your comments are well taken. Similarly, the Harry Potter books, especially these later volumes, are not for young children in the sense that they are getting very scary, I think. And a parent is the best judge. A parent in a good relationship with their child knows if their child can deal with make-believe scariness and with fear and with danger and lives being lost. I mean, this is very tragic and sad when someone loses a dearly loved person. And I think you are correct about Lord of the Rings trilogy. It's one that on one level a child can read. I read them when I was in eighth grade. I don't remember very much about it now. I should read them again because I know Tolkien was aiming for a real a Christian allegory and meaning. There's another super book and most recent caller. You might want to get hold of this. It's a book called Faith Journey Through Fantasy Lands, a Christian dialogue with Harry Potter, Star Wars, and the Lord of the Rings, written by Russell Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N, and I can really promote this one because it's from Augsburg Books, which is our publishing house, Faith Journey Through Fantasy Lands. And it talks about common themes and archetypes that run through all three of those mythologies. And you might find that real interesting to look at.
Let me ask you a little bit about something that's not a theme for our program today. We've talked about Christian themes in Harry Potter, and as a Christian pastor of a Lutheran church, of course, that's very appropriate. But what about other people of other religions, other faiths, reading these books? You say they have all these Christian themes in them.
Mm-hmm.
Is a Jewish writer, a Muslim writer, a Hindu writer, a Buddhist reader, rather, are they going to be offended by this? Or do they find truths in it that are expressed from their faith traditions?
I think we can say that as Christians, we interpret things through the lens of Christ, through the lens of our understanding of the Holy Trinity and our reading of Scripture. I would say that there are certain conflicts and certain motifs that run throughout world religions. We see them decisively expressed as Christians in Jesus Christ. So, for example, the idea of the noble self-sacrifice and the power of sacrificial love is something that other religions will also embrace for the most part. But for Christians, of course, we see that as divine embodied in Christ. So I think it's something that other religions would find worthwhile, and I'm sure they see things in here too. But because Rowling is Christian, I think there is an explicitly Christian dimension to this. After all, the people at Hogwarts still celebrate Christmas, which I always found a fine irony, considering how many Christians are opposed to the books. They do celebrate Christmas, but they celebrate it the way that most of our neighbors do, as a secular holiday.
Mm. You described earlier Harry Potter as the world's most famous seeker. That's a subtitle, I think, of one of the books you quoted. Tell us about Harry Potter as a seeker. What's he looking for?
Yeah, that's another symbolic thing with Harry. That's his position when he plays Quidditch, which is the wizarding sport. He plays the position of the seeker. There are a couple of things about Quidditch, and if I could explain it, that would be another hour. But there is one ball that is released that has wings, and it's called the Golden Snitch. And Harry is the seeker, and it is his duty to find and capture the Golden Snitch before the other team's seeker does. And that effectively ends the game. So in that sense, he's a seeker. The pun is he is seeking his destiny. He is seeking to find out who he really is, what his background really is, who his parents really were, and what this wizarding identity of his really means. So he is a seeker in that sense.
I'm sorry you brought up Quidditch, because for me that was just a game that didn't make sense for me. I thought, this isn't working, but that's just a very minor point.
No, you know, it reminds me of when I used to read the Hornblower novels, which I also love, and I'd get to the parts where they started describing how the mainsail is rigged up to the this and that, and I'd kind of scan it.
Mm-hmm.
Or when you hit all those really bad Russian names in Dostoevsky and you just kind of go. Quidditch was something that I didn't grasp really well in the books, but when I saw it in the films, then I started to get it. And J.K. Rowling has said that when she saw Quidditch in the first movie, that was exactly how she envisioned it.
Mm-hmm.
So view it simply as a means to an end, you know, to understand Harry and his relationships with these other players and so on.
Let's talk a little bit more about your background. It's rather interesting for a Lutheran pastor to come from a Jewish family. Your mother was Jewish, you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, non-practicing, but yes, my mom has a Jewish background. She's an immigrant from Europe and was displaced during the war, as a matter of fact. And I grew up in Chicago in a non-churched family, not really practicing anything, but I'm a Girl Scout convert. I met with the Girl Scouts in the church basement, and my Girl Scout leader invited me to children's choir and to come to church, and as they say, the rest is history. So the Lutheran Church has been enduring me ever since.
Now, the Lutheran Church is known for its good music, and so was that part of the attraction for you as a youth, singing in the choir?
It was, but I think just the whole liturgical life of the church appealed to me, and thankfully, a pastor who came when I was reaching adolescence and hit confirmation class, who had been a missionary in Japan and was a wonderful preacher and brought the faith right down to earth for me. And I later was a missionary in Japan myself, and I owe that to Pastor Tack.
How long were you in Japan?
3 years, and I was teaching at a boys' high school there.
We have another caller on line one. You're on the air with our guest, Donna Hecker-Smith. Yes, line one.
I called earlier, and I just wanted to make a comment about when you said there was only 3 instances of spells. In fact, if you were to do research on some of the things in the book, you'd find a lot of occult practices. And for brevity, I'll just say one in there. If you're aware of book 4 of the series, the evil character named Wormtail, I believe, cuts up Harry's arm to extract blood in order to bring Voldemort, the most evil character, back to life. Mm-hmm. And even though this isn't a spell, it is a... This is an occult practice done to supposedly pass magic power from one person to another during some occult rituals. Now, I'm sure you don't, you probably might not buy that now, not having that much knowledge about occult maybe, but just the fact that...
Hang on. Dimitri, don't hang up. Stay there, Dimitri.
Okay.
Actually, what you're referring to is one of those Christian things, in a way. I said that the devil is only referenced twice in all the books. So let's clarify that first. The devil is only magic, and once in the name of a plant. The second thing is, what is Christian communion but the life-giving blood of Jesus Christ and the life-giving body of Christ? You know, the idea that blood has atoning and life-giving powers has a lot of Christian meaning. And it's interesting that the evil one is seeking life from the blood of the good one. Now, go ahead and respond. Oh, he's gone. Okay, sorry about that. Thanks, Dimitri, for calling back.
In terms of the Harry Potter books, you've talked about various Christian themes. Is there a theme of resurrection?
We haven't actually seen that yet, because when people die, they're gone. However, in each of the books, there is a cycle and a pattern, and again, this is John Granger's work, where he points out that every time Harry goes through a dying and rising again experience, and there is usually some symbolic item or person that brings him through. An example would be in Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. He finds himself dying as a result of his encounter with Tom Riddle, who is Voldemort, and what brings him back is the phoenix that belongs to Dumbledore. The phoenix is an ancient Christian symbol for Christ, and he is brought back to life by the tears of the phoenix. And so there is, in a sense, a mini death and resurrection in each book.
Any last theme to mention in our last 30 seconds?
I guess I would say definitely the good and evil and the power of sacrificial love are something that we have to take away from these Harry Potter stories. Harry has a scar on his forehead, which he sustained from Voldemort's attack at the time that his mother gave her life for him. And, Voldemort, in encountering Harry later, even says, she didn't have to die, but she chose to. And he has no notion of the power of this. And Dumbledore is the one who tells Harry, that's a power that even Voldemort cannot match, sacrificial love. And it makes us think of Jesus' statements in the Gospel of John when he says, greater love has no one than this, that they give their life for a friend. And his own sacrifice on the cross is foreshadowed there.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Reverend Donna Hacker Smith, who is the pastor at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Champaign, an Evangelical Lutheran Church of America congregation, 2101 South Prospect Avenue. What time are your services?
We are at 8 o'clock and 10:30 on Sundays, and we have Sunday school at 9:15. And free donuts and bagels, and we like everybody. Free admission. Thank you.
The phone number at the church, if you have questions, further questions for our guest today, 352-1732. The church website is gslc-cu.org.
And I should say, Dimitri, I'm off on Mondays.
Our guest coming up next week is Kevin Stein, the current Poet Laureate for the state of Illinois. He'll be reading some of his poetry and talking about his experiences as Poet Laureate. On November 14, Gay King Creedy, who is chaplain at Cunningham Children's Home, will be talking about some of her experiences there. November 21st, on Keeping the Faith, Ted Kooser, the most recently selected U.S. Poet Laureate, will be our guest. And I've read some of his poetry in the weeks past, preparing people for this poetry month coming up here on Keeping the Faith next week. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program. I'm the executive director for the University YMCA. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
To Daniel Libeskind, buildings are much more than concrete boxes. They're expressions of hope, joy, freedom, and memory. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time, under the best of our knowledge, architect Daniel Libeskind talks about his master design for the World Trade Center site. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana.
Support for today's broadcast comes from the Prairie Ensemble, presenting Benjamin Britten's mini-opera, Noah's Flood, on Saturday, November 6th at University Place Christian Church in Champaign. The large cast includes singers and instrumentalists from throughout the community, with the Central Illinois Children's Chorus, the East Central Illinois Youth Orchestra, and Roger Cooper as the voice of God. For more information, call 355-9077 or visit prairieensemble.org.
A flood watch is in effect tonight through tomorrow evening for Champaign-Urbana. Tonight, a chance of light rain in the evening, then occasional rain and a chance of thunderstorms with heavy rainfall after midnight. The low in the upper 40s with east winds around 5 miles per hour this evening, increasing to 10 to 15 miles per hour after midnight. Tomorrow, occasional showers and a chance of thunderstorms with heavy rainfall. The high in the upper 50s with east winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. It's 6 p.m. Central Time. This American Life is next.